Hello, everybody, and welcome to Patriotic Weekly Review, episode number 43. And we are here tonight live on YouTube and also on Radio Albion. Now, do not forget that. We are live on both YouTube and on RadioAlbion.com. And importantly, if you want to watch the replay of this show, the replays and the full back catalogue of Patriotic Weekly Review episodes are available on BitChute. I get people messaging me every week saying, Mark, I really wanted to watch this week's episode with whoever was on, and I can't, it's disappeared. Well, you can watch them all, they're all on BitChute. The answer's always the same. And not only are all the episodes of PWR available on BitChute, but so are all of my videos, every single one, even the ones that have been censored on YouTube, are there in their original format on BitChute. So please make sure you hop over to BitChute and subscribe to me there, because that is the best place for uncensored content and for you to find your favorite videos which have disappeared down the Google memory hole. Now, if you would like to contribute to this show, you can contribute now through Entropy. Entropy is the way to ask questions, and the link to Entropy is in the chat right now. It's in the description of the show. It's on my Twitter and it's on my Telegram. Entropy is a fantastic add-on, and it allows you to not only ask questions and make donations, but the best questions are voted on, and the highest voted questions are read out and asked every week on this show from the audience, and every single donation that submits a comment or a question is always read out and always put to the panel. So if you would like to contribute to the show, the best way is through Entropy. And as I said, the link to Entropy is in the chat now. It is also on my Telegram and on my Twitter. So check that out. And please, if you want to ask questions, use Entropy, because that is the best way to get in touch with the panel. If you can't contribute through Entropy and you wish to make a financial contribution, you can contribute via Bitcoin. My Bitcoin address is in the description of the show. And if you want to contribute in other ways, please email me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. And if you wish to email me because you have problems or want to get in touch or want to be active in the movement, that is always the best way to reach me. If you email me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com, you will receive a reply, unless, however, you spam me with just links. If you send me an email with just a link in it and nothing else, I'm not going to reply. And also, if you send me circular emails, I don't reply to those either. But if you send me an actual email for me to read that requires some attention, or you need help, or you need advice, that is the best place to reach me. And I always reply, or do my best to reply, within 24 hours on a weekday. Or if you email me over the weekend, I'll do my best to get back to you on Monday morning. So tonight we have, as always, no white guilt, but the special guest this week is Greg Johnson, and we'll be introducing him shortly. Now, I have just become aware, as the show was starting, that apparently I tweeted out something the other day that annoyed somebody called Amy Mech. Now, I wasn't really aware of Amy Mech. I think I might have seen the odd tweet she's done, but apparently I annoyed her by tweeting something out, and Katie Hopkins has disavowed me for tweeting something that somebody else also tweeted. So Katie Hopkins, furious because I tweeted something that somebody else had already tweeted that I didn't know about. Now, I didn't know about any of this drama until a few minutes ago. I think it's absolutely ludicrous that anyone could get their knickers in a twist over something, somebody tweeting something similar to what somebody else has tweeted. But apparently this has been a huge thing. But because I don't live on social media, I haven't heard anything about this. So if people thought I was going to comment about it, which a number of people in the chat have been talking about, I don't really have much to say, because until a few seconds ago or a few minutes ago, I wasn't even aware that it happened, let alone was such a large issue, which has led to me being blocked by both this Amy Mech, or Amy Meek, we pronounce it, and also Katie Hopkins has now blocked me as well, which is very, very childish. Now, there is one other final announcement before we move over to Jason. I was meant to be doing a interview with Zero News tomorrow night. However, that has sadly been cancelled due to his ill health, and we are trying to arrange that soon. So Zero News, get well soon, and I look forward to working with you in the future. But for now, let's pass it over to Jason. What have you been up to this week, my friend? And also, is there an after party? And if so, who is on tap?
Well, before I get to that after party, big hello to you, a big hello to Greg, great to have you here, and a big hello to this marvelous audience. I just saw Way of the World step through the door. So how exciting is that to have such big stars, luminaries in our sphere? Now, I just want to say real quickly, before I say who's on tap, that I didn't know on this past Sunday, I did a going free, and all of you who are here who saw that going free can say as well here in the chat, and of course anybody can go over to my channel and see. I speculated that based on the information that was out there, using reason, logic, and evidence, using what I teach in Going Free about what is happening with this coronavirus, I speculated that it has a doppelganger and actually much more deadly twin. And then this morning I was sent, right here in the Daily Mail, two strains of the killer coronavirus are spreading around the world, according to a study, and one is much more deadly than the other. Now, I don't have clairvoyance. I don't have I don't have a little crystal ball here, but what I am doing is going free. And if you want to be able to do that as well, then you will be able to make such predictions with accuracy as I just shared there. Once again, I didn't know when I did the Sunday show if there was any of that sort of news out there before. It was pure speculation. You can watch that and hear it in my voice. But today, I will mention before passing it back that we have on tap tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the one, the only, Dion Secret Sources is going to be with us. It's going to be a marvelous time. Everybody loves her. Make sure you do not miss it. That's over on No White Guilt on YouTube. And we look forward to seeing you all there. And I look forward to getting this chat and this conversation underway. I pass it back to you, Mark.
Okay, so now we've got that out of the way, we will introduce our special guest, who is none other than Greg Johnson. Now, Greg Johnson has been a regular guest on PWR and Tutar before that. He is an excellent advocate for this movement. He has written many very, very important and excellently written books and is, of course, the man who runs Countercurrents Publishing. He is a major node in our international network. He is a speaker. He is a writer. He is a producer of wonderful content. I have met him a couple of times, and he's always a great person to be around. And I always really, really look forward to him being on the show, especially tonight, because we have a couple of really, really big issues to talk about. Firstly, we have the issues that are going on in Greece. And secondly, we have the arrest of Tommy Robinson. Now, a lot of people have been messaging me about the Tommy Robinson issue, and we've had Greg on before, and he's always very vocal about issues concerning Tommy Robinson. So he's a great guest to have on tonight to talk about this specific issue. And there's a lot of takes going around about this. So I think that's going to be a very hot topic. Anyway, without further ado, Greg, welcome to PWR. Please tell us all where we can find you, how we can contribute to your excellent work, and give us a little bit of a rundown of what you've been up to since the last episode of PWR when you were a...
Well, Mark, thank you again for having me on. It's always a pleasure. My website is countercurrents.com. That's countercurrents with a hyphen in it. If you don't use the hyphen, you get some kind of neo-Marxist website from India. So you got to get the hyphen. And one of the funniest things that happens, it happens about once a month maybe, is I get some neo-Marxist from South Asia sending me an article, and I read through it and I'm scrunching up my face trying to figure out what the hell's going on. And then I realize, oh, it's another person who didn't get the hyphen right and starts trying to shop their stuff to the wrong countercurrents. So counter-currents.com. One time, an article actually got edited and published before the guy wrote in and said, this is the wrong countercurrents. I'm sorry. It was John Morgan was editing it. I said, so what do you think of this? He said, well, it's sort of relevant. It's kind of critical of like capitalism. And so anyway, the poor guy was mortified when he saw his article go up and looked at all the other stuff on the front page. But anyway, Countercurrents is my fortress on the web. And then I have a couple little outposts, reduced number. They showed me from the YouTube last year, but we do have a Twitter account. So that's New Right America. And gosh, that's about it. We've been completely wiped off Amazon.com and Barnes and Noble. But our books still sell, and we still have our own platform. So if you're interested in this work, please, visit countercurrents.com. You can also order all of our books there, or you can order them at better bookstores across the globe. And I mean better than Amazon and Barnes and Noble. Anyway, since the last time I've been on, I've just been sort of hunkered down writing a book. I'm writing another book. It's called White Identity Politics, and it's supposed to be a slender volume in the vein of the White Nationalist Manifesto, which came out in September of 2018. And the goal is to restate the case for white identity politics in light of political changes and also academic arguments and studies that have appeared since the manifesto came out, which are very, very useful. So that's basically what's been occupying my time. A lot of things that I have been researching and thinking about are coming up on the website. So I wrote a 4-part critique of Yoram Hazony's book, The Virtue of Nationalism. I'm now working on a series that's going to deal with Eric Kaufman's book, White Shift, and on and on. And I'm planning to have the book out in the spring. So that's kind of a looming deadline, and I'm very much focused on it now.
Okay, excellent. Well, this leaves us with the topics tonight. Now, I'm not sure what the chat wants us to discuss first, either the Greek issue or the Tommy Robinson issue. I think we should start with the Greek issue because that's major international news. I think that's the big one. So let's start with that. Now, obviously, we've seen what's going on in Greece, and we've seen the way a country, because Turkey and Greece have never been great friends, and we've seen tensions between them before. However, this is a direct example of a country using so-called refugees, or I would call them economic migrants, as a weapon of war. The Turkish president Erdogan has said that they have around 3.7 million Syrian refugees in Turkey. They also have additional hundreds of thousands from places like Afghanistan, Iraq, places in Africa. Mm. And they're saying, we're not holding these people anymore. We are literally letting them go to the border. They've been trying to get to the border. They've been trying to get to Europe. And we are now not holding them back. That's it. We are giving them passage to the border. And really, in many ways, that's almost like a declaration of war. Mm-hmm. Because here you have a foreign president saying that he's going to unleash what amounts to an invading army upon another nation. Now, those people might not be troops in the conventional sense. They might not carry assault rifles. They might not carry other weapons. They're not in tanks. They're not in helicopters or aeroplanes. But they are a huge force that are trying to breach the border and are trying to do this to colonize the country they are trying to illegally gain access to. And we're not just talking tens of thousands here. Turkey has millions of these so-called refugees. And up until now, they have been restraining large numbers of them from reaching the Greek border. But at the moment, we've seen these pictures, people fighting with border control, people flooding the shores in dinghies, people going up estuaries in little boats and forcing their way through checkpoints. This amounts to a complete invasion. And the scale of this is unprecedented because, as I said, we aren't talking. Usually when you see migrants come in, it's thousands, tens of thousands in a given period. But here we are talking millions at one time. And as troop movements go, and I might be wrong, but have there been many troop movements in global history that consist of those kind of numbers all heading to one narrow border point? I don't think they have. I think this is unprecedented, but this is only the tip of the iceberg, or should I say it's only a foreshadowing of things that are to come, because we are seeing a global population boom in the poorest countries of the world. Over the next 20 years, the African population is set to double. So if you think you're seeing large numbers of African migrants come to European shores at the moment, well, you ain't seen nothing yet, because Africa can't cope with its current population. And if it's not coping with its current population, it's definitely not coping with double its current population. Where are those people going to go? Well, the clue is what you're seeing now. They're all going to want to come here. And Turkey certainly doesn't have the infrastructure. It doesn't have the wealth. It doesn't have the resources to hold those people forever. It doesn't have the resources or infrastructure to feed, clothe, and look after those people. The only nations that have the wealth or the perceived wealth to do that are European nations. And people might say, and this is just something I want to add to this before I throw this over to Greg, but this is very, very important. The Conservative government have been in power here in Britain for a decade now. And we saw something that was rather unprecedented, an increasing Conservative majority a decade into Conservative rule. Now, usually when you're a decade in to any party's rule, you start to see diminishing returns for that party. People start to tire of them and the political pendulum starts to swing in the other direction. But the opposite has happened. And the worrying thing is, the British people are saying, well, if Boris gets in, if the Conservatives are in charge, then we're not going to see these migrants coming to our shores. And I just want to try and give these people's heads a bit of a wobble, because in 2019, well, September 2018 to September 2019, so essentially in 2019, we'll say, for sake of brevity, the Conservatives let 379,000 non-EU migrants into Britain. Now, I often give the 2016 immigration figures, which was when Theresa May was Home Secretary. Now, in 2016, Theresa May let 650,000 migrants into Britain. And then there was the illegal migrants that she estimated at around 200,000. So we were looking about 850,000 that year. Well, now, last year, we are talking 379 migrants from non-EU countries. So EU migration was always slightly larger than non-EU migration. So if that was the case again, we might be talking around 1 million people last year alone, because if you've got 379,000 non-European migrants, and if you times that by two to assume that that would be equaled by EU migrants, and then you add your 200,000 illegal immigrants, saying it's on par with 2016, which again, it may well have increased, you've got about 960,000 people coming into Britain in 2019. Now, let's put that into perspective before I hand things over to Greg. That is enough people to fill the city of Birmingham, which is Britain's second largest city. And they've come in a single year. Now, that is an insane number of people. That's an insane situation to be in. And if this continues, Britain's population, which I think at the last census, which was 2011, was just hovering under the 66 million mark. Well, that was in 2011. Well, if we're taking in nearly 1 million people every year, and we don't really know how many we're taking in due to the fact that illegal immigration is so high and the border force is so understaffed, obviously by design, this isn't by accident. How many people are in Britain now? And how much does that put people at risk? And we've talked about this before, but we've seen all these horrendous floods in the South, and everyone's trying to blame something other than the real issue. The real issue, the real reason we're seeing these floods is because the demand for housing, the demand for roads, the demand for infrastructure, the demand for shopping centres, that is all driven by migration and a growing population, is destroying the foliage, it's destroying the tree cover, it's meaning everything has to be concreted over so that the water that flows over the land, it doesn't get held up, it doesn't get absorbed, but it all goes directly into the river very, very quickly. And that means a lot of flooding. People are saying it's because we don't dredge our rivers. Well, dredging your rivers is only a short-term solution. The fact of the matter is, we're facing this flooding because we don't have the necessary foliage and tree canopy to hold up the amount of water that is falling upon Britain. And the reason we don't have that is because we're building everywhere. And why are we building everywhere? Because of migration. Just another way, immigration is really damaging people's lives in Britain. And with this invasion of Europe, with the Conservatives allowing so many non-EU migrants in, and with Boris Johnson recently going to Africa and saying, hey, we're opening our doors to Africans now, and with the African population set to double in the next 20 years, we are on the verge of a catastrophe. And the Conservatives, sure as hell, are not going to offer any solutions. They will offer some form of placebo. They will offer some kind of words to the people which will make people think, oh, we voted in the Patriotic Party here, but they're not actually going to do anything, and their results show that. We are on the brink of Europe being overrun. What are your thoughts on this, Greg?
Well, recently I did a podcast with Zurius, the musician, who I think is a wonderful guy. It's up at Countercurrents, and he talked about his inspiration for starting to make music and putting it on YouTube. And it was the video Europe with Open Gates, the forced mass, you know, flooding of Europe. I forget the exact name of it. It came out in 2015. And when I put the podcast up, I linked that. I found it on BitChute and watched it again. And it was really stunning. It was a very well-made piece of propaganda, and it gave me a sort of benchmark for looking at what's happening now, because this happened just basically at about the same time as I put the video up, or the audio of the interview up. And I have to say, I'm very, very pleased with the reaction this time as opposed to in 2015. There's a lot more opposition. A lot of political leaders are opposed to it. The Greeks are not opening their borders. They're fighting against this. This is good. I think the climate has changed dramatically in Europe over the past 5 years, and it's been very, very good for Europe, and it's been very, very good for national populists like us. I think that this invasion, and it is simply an invasion, most invasions, especially colonial type invasions, are not soldiers, right? They're large populations of civilians who come and settle and take over somebody else's country. That's what's going on here. It's colonization. And it's not military invasion because, well, Europe isn't putting up a military fight against it. So, of course, it doesn't have to be a military invasion. It's just a mass influx of people that seems to be being resisted now, and that's a very positive sign. Now, let me just say, and this is going to sound terribly cynical, but if Europe ceases to hold these people back, if we have another migrant crisis like in 2015, I'm going to be rubbing my hands together in glee, because the migrant crisis was one of the best things in the world for racial nationalists. It was one of the best things in the world for national populists. It awakened more people than any event in my lifetime, at least during my involvement with this movement. It was the biggest eye-opener. And if it happens again, it's only going to continue to help us. But it's a positive sign that there is resistance already, that Europeans are not just laying down for this this flood of people coming in. So I think that's a really positive sign, and I hope that this is going to be resisted. It's going to be repelled, and that we're going to see a resistance of, you know, against other migrant waves in the future. And if it isn't, it'll simply allow us an opportunity to work harder. It'll give us a new audience. It'll make people more receptive to our message, and it will allow us to finally build up that wall of resistance that Europe needs. Because yeah, the world is filled with people, and they are reproducing at alarming rates. And if there are no barriers for them coming to Europe and colonizing it, it's going to happen eventually. We have to prevent that. And this crisis shows already the progress that we've made since 2015. And like I said, it's going to help us, I think, increase awareness and build resolve. So finally, you know, Europe can be a fortress against these mass migrations of people.
Well, Jason, what's your take on all of this, my friend?
I'm ecstatic about the fact that the Greek people, our brothers and sisters in Western kind, are so fed up. It's not the Greek government. The Greek government's hand is being forced by the Greek people. And in part, you know, we see that they wanted to build this giant center, this holiday resort for these militarized migrants who are being forced, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, they're being forced. Erdogan has declared war. When you talk about these things with your friends, family, and strangers, the most important thing is that you're helping them to go free, to come to the realization of what's going on in the world and join with the body of our people, making a people out of this deracinated race. And they wanted to build this resort for all of these militarized migrants on this island. And the people kept undermining, setting fire to the efforts, sometimes literally. And the ships pulled up and dumped off the militarized police. And then the great Greek people used their fantastic powers of persuasion to go and wake these law officers up in the, you know, mid-morning, and to show them that it's time for them to leave the island. And they even grabbed some of these photographers and videographers who were out there to find evidence to prove the anti-white narrative that it's all just babies and children that are trying to come from these distant lands. And they showed them that their equipment belongs in the ocean, and that maybe they need to work on their self-defense a little bit. And so the Greek government, being broke, having an emaciated military, and having a population of the actual Greek people, are getting fed up, or have to go out there and defend their 99-mile border, or whatever it is, roughly, to the tune of, you know, even having the farmers in Greece show up with their tractors to help light this border because the military is so emaciated, so that they can defend this border. We see that there are bullets flying from these militarized migrants across from Turkey's side into Greece. And of course, the police and border agents are shooting back, and some people are dying here and there. Molotov cocktails. We're seeing videos come out of Arabic children being held in front of smoking fires, campfires, so that their faces are dirty and tearing, and then running them over to the Western media so that they have something to capture and then prove the anti-white narrative is true, that these are all just women and children. Instead, we're seeing a government now whose hand is being forced, and this is what ultimately needs to happen, peacefully, of course. Hand is being forced, and we have their Navy out there shooting live ammunition into the water in front of these landing craft that the Turks are providing. And ladies, to these militarized migrants, and that's what this is, militarized migrants. It absolutely is warfare. Erdogan has declared war not on Greece, not on Bulgaria, but on Western kind, the people, not these different independent nations, because their governments are anti-white. He hates white people. He wants to harm white people. He wants these militarized gang rape units roaming the landscape in white countries. He wants to eviscerate our financial health, our ability to produce and maintain our infrastructure. When you do anything to weaken a nation around you, that is automatically warfare. Does everybody forgotten history? Have they forgotten where in the past kings and princes, they used to, all of the captors, that all of the people that they used to take captive, they would blind them and then send them back to the kingdom that they were from? That was an act of warfare. And the reason why was because those people became a burden on the kingdom that they wanted to take down. They made it became a burden on that principality, a burden on that country, weakening that country. Every country around the world, every non-white country wants the West to be multiracial. They all talk about it in their versions of white papers, keep pushing all of these different races into the West because they know that diversity weakens. Only the idiots who have been propagandized with meme pathogens believe that it somehow can strengthen you. The inverse of reality is indeed the case. So anything that weakens. So yeah, they're coming out there and the Greeks are coming out. They're fighting back. I'm very excited about this. It's going to engender more of such behavior. It may even cause Erdogan, since he knows that Greece doesn't have a lot of friends militaristically, it may even encourage him to take more aggressive means. Maybe fly some jets by and drop some cluster bombs on the border so that these militarized migrants can then run across as all of the Greek guards, border agents are dead. That would be something that we would really be able to take to our friends, family, and strangers. And remember, when you talk about this, and I'll pass it right back to Mark so we can keep moving around the conversation. When you talk with your friends, family, and strangers about this, you're talking about one, Erdogan, an anti-white, non-white, who has declared war on Western kind, not on Greece, not on some abstraction, not on some political idea, not on some abstract government, but on our people as a biological reality. And that these things, this is not only demographic warfare, but ladies and gentlemen, it's biological warfare, not just because of white erasure by way of the race desecration and miscegenation, if you will, not just because of that, but because now we do have things like coronavirus and who knows what else that could be riding on the backs of these people and coming to a town near you. I pass it back.
Well, I do have an amusing story to share with you. And I thought, because often we talk about things that can be bad news. And there is bad and good news in this. The bad news is these people trying to get into Europe. Bad news is that some Europeans are trying to aid and abet these invaders. And the good news is the Greek people seem to be rallying to stop them coming in. And this seems to be waking a lot of people up. But there's always a bit of humor. And I always like to have a bit of lightheartedness on this show. So I thought I would share this with you. Hopefully you can see this. I'm going to read this out to you. BBC News, England. Bristol volunteer Lesbos migrant aid worker feels hunted. A couple who helps migrants on a Greek island have been left terrified after feeling hunted by angry locals over the work and claim that police do not help. Dav, 40, and his girlfriend Maisie arrived on Lesbos last week as part of the voluntary aid project they set up on the island in 2017. But they have had to stop work for the first time because of clashes between Syrian refugees and residents. The BBC has approached police for comment on the Bristol couple's claims. Greece has barred asylum applications because of a recent large increase in arrivals in Greek territory from Turkey. Dav, who asked the BBC not to use his and Maisie's surnames, have been delivering aid and relief through his project, Refugee Arts Trail. In other words, these are the traitors helping people enter Europe. These are the bad guys. And he says, however, during the most recent trip, he had to abandon his plans because he says local residents are directing their anger at volunteers and doctors delivering aid and relief. Indeed, imagine that. Local people who don't want their country flooding with migrants are angry at the people who are tempting the migrants to come in. How shocking, how strange. He said residents have been posting the locations of volunteers on social media in an attempt to intimidate them and get them to leave. Dav said he was also worried local police were not doing enough to protect volunteers. In other words, the Greek police don't seem like the cowardly backstabbing anti-whites that the British police are. So props to the Greek police.
Yeah.
So some more good news there. I think we can all agree that there is some good news there. And yes, I'm actually pretty happy with that. That made me chuckle. That warmed my heart to know that the Greek people are saying no, not only to the invaders, but those who aid and abet the invaders. And before we move on to the next topic, would you or Greg like to comment on this?
I think it's wonderful news. I think that Europeans are getting some spine about this. They're standing up to it. It's wonderful that there are independent media people there who are, for instance, documenting the fake news production process, right? People are being coached into, you know, apparently being, desperately floundering around in the water in front of cameras to gin up sympathy, or these children being held over a fire, for God's sake, so that they weep. All of this fake news production is being documented by independent people carrying phone cameras and things like that. There are ways of getting this out there. They can't control the narrative like they used to. And that's wonderful news. The underlying thing here, of course, the reason why the Turks are threatening to open the doors is because they're in trouble in Syria, in Idlib. And I think that, you know, ultimately the solution to the Syrian refugee problem is to put Assad back in charge of Syria, to let him win this civil war, which is almost over. Idlib is the last place that Assad doesn't control. It's adjacent to Turkey. It's adjacent to a place called Hatay, which is part of, really historically part of Syria, ethnically part of Syria, that's all been ruled by Turkey since basically the end of the Ottoman Empire. And the attempt to finally drive these terrorists out is being thwarted by Turkey. The Turks are getting involved in Libya. They're intervening in Libya. They're intervening in Syria. And because they're getting their asses handed to them, I think Erdogan is somewhat panicky, and he's trying to use these migrants, these refugees, etc., as a bargaining chip to try and get, I don't know what exactly he wants from Europe. The Russians are helping Syria. This is not playing well for Erdogan and Turkey. And so it's hard to understand what this excitable nitwit is up to, though, what his game is. But ultimately, the solution to the Syrian refugee problem is a peaceful, stable Syria under the rule of Assad. And then all of these people can go back. Now, there's a reason why international law and international agreements make provisions for refugees. It's a simple argument. Immanuel Kant made this argument 200 years ago or more. You know, we all live on the surface of the globe, and every people is susceptible to war or natural disaster or some bad things. Bad things can happen to all peoples. Now, some peoples definitely more accident prone than others, right? But it can happen to us all. And therefore, it's reasonable to make, to allow refugees to flee from a country into your country on the assumption that your people could want to do the same thing in the future, right? But international law about refugees as it exists right now basically says that you're a refugee when you move to the first safe country. And if you leave that first safe country for other countries, you're a migrant. Now, the safe countries bordering on Syria are Lebanon and Turkey. And Turkey is obligated under international law to take these people in. They are not. They have no basis in international law to send them on to other countries. That really should be treated as an act of war. And it's also reasonable, really, for the West, I think, to try and do what we can to keep them out of our countries by, you know, providing whatever aid is necessary to keep them as refugees in Turkey or Lebanon, because we don't want them here. And they have a legitimate claim to refugee status in those countries. But the ultimate goal of European diplomacy should be ending the Syrian civil war and then repatriating all of these people back. And we're going to have to make sure that they can go back without claiming that they're afraid of revenge from Assad and things like that. this war needs to be over. There needs to be an amnesty. All these people need to go back. That's the ultimate solution. And if the idiots in Ankara would just let this war end, I think that that would be a great thing. But they're not letting the war end, and they're actually stirring up these millions of refugees and trying to throw them at Europe. Turkey is a very problematic country. It's a very bad neighbor of Europe. 100 years ago, Turkey was occupied by the Western powers. It was partitioned and occupied by the West. And we had their destiny in the palm of our hands. Mostly it was the French and the British. But it was Western Europe had the destiny of Turkey in its hands. Now Turkey has the destiny of Europe in its hands. And that is not a position that we want to be in. Frankly, it's a terrible thing that in 1920, when they had the power to do this, they didn't partition Anatolia very, very differently. Turkey would not be as big and dangerous and bad a neighbor. It wouldn't even be a neighbor of Europe at all, right? So yeah, there's just a lot of issues underlying this problem. But again, ending the Syrian civil war with Assad as the president would be the ultimate solution to this. And we should look in that direction.
Do you have any final takes on this, Jason?
Yes, I'll just add to what Greg just said astutely, that what they want, Erdogan, in Turkey is they want several trillion euros, and probably, I think they're saying billion, I'm sure it's several trillion euros. They're trying to extort it. They're claiming that it was promises made to them. And of course, they want pressure on Russia to get out of Syria or to withhold their hand so that Turkey can hold on to the ill-gotten gains that it has made in northern Syria. And the EU is doing neither of those things. And so that's why he is now threatening and now launched this war. And really, it should be retaliated against in the way. And if Greece had a military and they had a government that actually cared about the white people, the actual founders of that country, they would respond militaristically to a military invasion. And make no mistake, these militarized migrants, they are shooting. There's video of them shooting back. The border guards having to hide from the shots being fired. We have that on our own border here in the United States, with drug traffickers and mules, human traffickers shooting across the border. If we had governments that cared about our people, that were for our people, worried about white well-being and our destiny, there would be artillery going off right now, and Greece would be shelling the Turks until they knocked this off. But of course, it can happen for several reasons, but that really is why Erdogan is launching this invasion, declaring this war, again, ladies and gentlemen, on Western kind. This is about harming all white people. There's no chance in hell they would make it to Greece and stop there. Greece cannot handle them. They're broke. They would take as many as they could and would sit down and go no further. And the rest would make their way up to your little town, your little village, wherever you might live. So talk about this with your friends and family in a way that it makes it real for them. Pass it back to you, good brother.
Thank you. Well, let's go on to our second topic tonight, our second big topic. There's actually three topics, but one of the topics is actually asked in a question. So I think we'll leave that to the Q&A later on. So let's talk a little bit about Tommy Robinson. Now, the other day, people were texting me saying, Tommy Robinson's been arrested again. He's been arrested again. He's been arrested. He's punched somebody. He's slapped somebody. He's been in an altercation. He was arrested at Centre Parks. Now, I know Tommy is quite a hot-headed guy. We've all seen him do things that maybe we wouldn't do. We've all seen him strike out. We've seen him hit people. We've seen him involved in altercations. But this seems a bit different. Now, if you haven't heard about this, I'm just going to give you the quick lowdown. Tommy has released a video, and this video shows him being arrested at Centre Parks. And it also shows him interviewing his 8-year-old daughter. You don't see her face, but you hear her talking to him. Now, Tommy claims that he was at Centre Parks with some friends and he was at the side of the pool, and his daughter ran up to him and claimed that she had been sexually assaulted by an adult male in the pool. He'd groped her. And Tommy then confronts this man, who tries to leave the scene. Tommy claims he bundles him over and tries to restrain him before the police arrive. And then the police arrive and arrest and arrest him, and I believe they've charged him now as well. Whilst the man who allegedly groped his daughter has just been let walk free. And his daughter has, I listened to the video he produced, it was quite compelling, actually. And I'm certainly not saying, that Tommy Robinson is a liar. He seemed very, very agitated when he was being arrested. He seemed genuinely angry. And I've said Tommy Robinson's has a lot of things I don't agree with, but I was watching that, and being a father myself, I definitely felt for him. If somebody did that to Sophia, if somebody did that to my daughter, I would be absolutely furious. Absolutely furious. And I think any dad would. But there's been different theories going around about this. And there's also been talk that maybe he was baited into this. Maybe this was all a plot by the state. Did somebody do this to get him arrested, to get him into more trouble? And again, I don't know. But I do think things will most likely come out in the wash. There's been numerous theories put forward. And because this is of such a sensitive nature, I'm not going to sit here and rubbish him. Now, I have my differences with him. I obviously think he's a shill for Israel. I think he's taking of people's money and spending it on a documentary completely unrelated to the documentary people donated for is absolutely terrible. But that certainly doesn't mean he deserves this or his daughter deserves anything terrible happening to her like this. This is absolutely, you know, abhorrent. And if it happened the way he said it has, and he seems very, very animated about this, it doesn't seem to be put on to me, but I'd like other people's opinions if they know anything about it. You know, in this case, I think, you know, we should certainly support his right to defend his daughter and to restrain somebody who has groped her. And he actually claims on the video that the man admitted that he touched his daughter and said he did it by accident. Now, I don't know how that would be the case. I don't know how that could happen. That seems absolutely ludicrous to me, because the man wasn't there with his own children. The man wasn't there with a group of kids and accidentally sort of picked up the wrong kid and threw her into the pool and was like, oh, sorry, that's not my daughter or anything like that. The guy was there on his own in the children's pool, touching children. There doesn't seem to be any logical excuse for how that happened. It wasn't like he said he brushed up against it. It wasn't like he said that, oh, well, you know, she came down the slide and bumped into me. I'm sorry. That wasn't what he said. Or it's not what Tommy said he said. But the strange thing is, Tommy has been arrested and charged, and it does not appear that this man has even been arrested or properly questioned by the police. Now, this is something which actually has precedent in the UK. There is a very famous case, which I've talked about many times in my weekly videos, and people are probably sick of me talking about this, but it needs to be stated time again until everyone knows about this case. And I'm never going to stop talking about it because it's so horrific. There was the case where two fathers went to a house where their daughters were being held by a grooming gang. And these two fathers tried to free their daughters. And due to the commotion, the police were called. And when the police arrived, the police arrested the fathers and left the girls in the clutches of their abusers. So there is precedent for this happening. There is precedent for people being arrested for trying to prevent their children being abused. So again, this isn't something where Tommy's just plucked it out of thin air. There is actual precedent for this. And I will also say this, and this is very important, and it's something we must always remember. The British police are not on our side. They are at best absolutely craven cowards. And at worst, they are complicit in these sexual crimes and are actually our enemies. The police are not our friends. The police are working against us. And they are people who are appointed basically on a political basis, promoted on a political basis, and have previously been told by their commanding officers to not investigate men who are accused of grooming or sexually abusing children. They covered up Jimmy Savile. They covered up Sir Cyril Smith, that fat, disgusting liberal who was touching little boys. I think it was in Rochdale. They covered up, I might be wrong on that. It might be another town. And if it is, I'm sorry, I've got the towns mixed up. They covered up the Rotherham grooming gang, the Telford grooming gang, the South Manchester grooming gang, the other South Yorkshire grooming gangs. They've been doing this all over the country. And I watched that video, and I do, on this issue, I have to say that Tommy did seem absolutely distressed about what happened. But I'm going to pass it over to the panel. I don't know what the audience thinks, but have you seen this video? Have you heard this news? Because it's pretty big over here. It's been in all the national papers. And Tommy did a very passionate video about this. Greg, have you seen this? Have you heard about it? Is it something you want to comment on?
Well, I have seen it. I've heard about this. The trouble with Tommy Robinson is that you can't just look at this and immediately say, okay, this is an obvious stitch up on the part of the police, because we know that this guy has a history of basically sort of exhibitionistic behavior where he tries to get himself in trouble, get arrested. He did this outside a trial of a grooming gang a couple years ago now, which was a big controversy, and he got put in jail. He really milked this. Kaylin Robinson, or is it Robertson? I can't even remember now, who was working with him at the time, who's a scumbag and a liar, was claiming that he was under threat from Muslim prisoners. And just it was just one lie on top of another, one lie, one exaggeration, one publicity stunt on top of another. And so anytime something comes up in my feed with Tommy Robinson involved, I look at it with a very jaundiced eye, I'm afraid. And it makes me so angry that this guy has such a profile. Well, it's because he's a relentless self-promoter, and there are lots of drooling imbeciles who really love the guy and will hear, you know, no criticism of his behavior. But because this guy has behaved so badly, it actually puts the victims and real victims, right, the accusations of parents and things like that in disrepute. He's crying wolf sometimes, I think. So I just don't know what to think about this. It could be absolutely genuine, but given that Tommy Robinson is involved and his past behavior, we have to regard it with some suspicion. And I wish he had not created this penumbra of doubt around his behavior, but he has a long history of extremely unethical, sociopathic, self-promoting behavior. And he's even so sociopathic that I could imagine that he could, enlist his own daughter in something like this. So the jury's out, at least as far as I'm concerned about this.
Okay. Have you got any thoughts on this, Jason?
I'll give a few. Why not? I agree with Greg on he's ruined his reputation. I think what probably happened, if I had to put money down, is that it's probably less likely that he roped his daughter into a big plan to get himself some more attention. Probably something happened at the pool, and he was enraged by it. He wanted this man questioned or this investigation. But then him being who he is, saw an opportunity to get on video again. And so conveniently, there's someone there to take it. Probably said, start the video camera, and probably took it further than he should have. I mean, I just quickly looked at the video, and it looked like he had plenty of opportunity to put an end to the discussion with the law officers and then perhaps follow up someplace else. But it looks like he continued to escalate it until they arrested him. And now I can understand if I had if any child, I don't even have to be the parent of the child or related to the child. If somebody was actually fondling some child in the pool, I would handle that person roughly, I must say. So irrespective of whose child it was. And so, and I would restrain them in any way was necessary for law enforcement to get there. And of course, something like, and I don't know all the details, but if it's something that was foolproof, like the children's pool, and some man is there in the children's pool without having children, yeah, I think that I think in America here, certainly, I probably wouldn't be alone in dragging him and then roughly holding him to the pavement until law enforcement arrived to take him or to question him or to investigate. But of course, what has happened with anti-whiteism, ladies and gentlemen, and this is the way that you should share it with everyone, is that we can no longer question this sort of behavior. I mean, is it actually a legitimate form of sexual expression? And where did that come from? Well, that comes from anti-whiteism, mom, dad, cousin, friend. This idea of molesting children, sexual relationships with children, this is being pushed. It is being normalized by anti-whites and anti-whiteism. And this indeed is what's coming for all of us. And so can you really punish somebody who is just expressing their sexual desires? And, you know, maybe the child should have been a little bit more stiff upper lipped when it came to
right.
the adult. You know?
Well, so who are we to assume that that big hairy dude was not actually somebody who identifies as an 8-year-old girl? Right.
No. Yeah.
Who are we? Yeah. Who are we to have any standards? Who are we to look to reality rather than, you know, the fantasies that that people have about themselves? So, yeah, it's a horrible mess. I wish that Tommy Robinson, as you said, had not ruined his reputation so badly that we have to look upon this with some doubt, because I would like to have lots of clear-cut cases about this that we could rally around without the fear of being embarrassed mm-hmm. when stuff comes out. And I know that a lot of Tommy Robinson supporters had egg on their face when they would run with these claims that were false. In the past that he would put out there, or they would treat him as a martyr when he was actually in the case where he got arrested outside of a trial. This guy was so hungry for publicity that he actually risked a mistrial of child predators mm-hmm. just so he could get some face time. And some publicity. That is totally sociopathic behavior on his part. And it's embarrassing to his followers. A lot of his followers are still mad at me for pointing it out, but some of them are mad at me because they're genuinely embarrassed by it. We don't want people in this movement who bring shame and embarrassment upon us. And unfortunately, Tommy Robinson is such an egomaniac and has such low standards of just low ethical standards that he's a threat. He threatens to bring disrepute upon us. And this is a serious struggle. This is an absolute massive crime that's been committed against children in the UK, these grooming gangs and things like that. And it really happened. Justice really needs to be done. And if people are injecting things that are fake or histrionic into it, that just undermines the credibility of this. And believe me, there are tons and tons of people. The whole friggin' establishment in the UK wants to sweep this under the rug. We can't give them plausible cover for sweeping this massive crime under the rug. And I'm afraid the behavior of this publicity hound has done that.
Well, there's some very interesting takes there, and I'm going to close this section with the following couple of points. Somebody in the chat has pointed out that Centre Parks is usually a place that's absolutely stacked with CCTV. That's for safety. There's usually always CCTV and a number of people watching those cameras constantly, and that's mainly for children's safeties. I've been to Centre Parks once before. There was a group of us went there. Actually, it was a business meeting that we did at Centre Parks, because it's quite a pleasant place to be. People used the pool. Everyone had a go on the slides. We sat around. We had a bit of a swim. And if there are children going on those slides and they are unaccompanied by adults, as they often are, they can get injured. And I will say this. I can't imagine there not being CCTV, and the CCTV will be shown in court. And if it is shown in court, it would show whether that man was in the vicinity of his daughter. But as I want to just make very clear, at this point in time, I have seen the video. He seemed very angry. Mm. The chat on Entropy's pretty much split over whether they think he's telling the truth or not. But I'm going to take him on his word, and I hope that he is telling the truth, because, and I hope that the truth does come out. And if he is telling the truth, I hope the man who's done this despicable act gets exactly what's coming to him and goes to jail, because this would be a horrendous act if it is exactly what he's saying. And if he is being persecuted, if he is being arrested for defending his daughter, and there is a precedent for this, this is another terrible miscarriage of justice. But there is one final thing I'll say about this. Tommy Robinson is in a very unique position, a position of both power and responsibility. And he's in a position of power because hundreds of thousands of people look up to him as a hero and as a role model and as someone who they think is going to lead them to something better and is going to help them, their families, and their children. He's in a position of power because of that, but that power brings about responsibility, because when you are a role model to those people, when you have those people's hopes and dreams riding on your shoulders, when you're carrying those hopes and dreams, you have to act with decorum. Now, I know that if that happened to Sophia, I would be absolutely raging. I would be furious. But equally, because of the work that I do, and because you people have been so kind and so generous and so good to me, I would have to think twice before I bundled somebody over or started doing something that could get me arrested, simply because the last thing that you guys want is for me to get arrested and bring shame on you. Because unfortunately, every time Tommy gets arrested, every time Tommy gets into trouble with the police, yes, his supporters rally around him. Yes, people do donate generously to him, but it lowers his credibility, especially when it's something involving violence. And I have to say this. If this was me and I was in his position, I would have been furious and I would have been struggling to restrain my own anger. But I'd have had to restrain myself simply because if I didn't, if I ended up in jail, if I wasn't here to do the things I do, and if I let all of you down, just to get one punch in on somebody, that one punch wouldn't be worth it, because I couldn't do that to you guys. And that's why I am careful. That's why I do my best to stay out of trouble. And that might be different for every man. He might not be able to control himself. And many people might say, look, Mark, I'm a dad. I wouldn't have been able to control myself. But in a situation like that, the best thing he could have done was just shown a little restraint, maybe followed the guy, filmed him, called park security, got his wife or whoever he was with to call the police, call 999 and say exactly what happened. Because when leaders of this movement are arrested for things outside of speech crimes and thought crimes are different, because we can't do what we're doing sometimes without the police coming down on us for things like that. That is an occupational hazard. But when it's acts of violence, it gives the press what they're looking for. And I hope that comes up across correctly, because I know the allegations are absolutely horrific. And if it happened to my daughter, I'd be furious. But when you are a leader, you have to think about the wider implications of your actions. And if you see red and can't control your temper in public places, that means you're not just putting yourself at risk, but you're putting your movement at risk, and you're risking letting down, in Tommy's case, hundreds of thousands of people. And I just hope, beyond all hope, that he's absolutely telling the truth, and that if he is telling the truth, the man is brought to justice and he gets exonerated. Because I just don't want to see people, good people who've donated so much money, end up being in some way taken for a ride again, or feel deflated and let down, because that hurts them and it hurts the wider movement. And we've seen it so many times. And I really hope that that's come across in the correct way, because I am certainly not attacking a man or his family when they're down. That is not what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to have a genuine discussion about that. And I think, like many other people, we all just want the truth. So I genuinely hope that's come across in the right way. And I'm certainly not trying to kick him when he's down, attack him or his family. And I have said, on balance, I do believe something happened, because I don't think he's that good an actor to pull off the performance that he gave. And again, that's not a knock at him. That's just, he did seem very genuine. Anyway, let's move on to the super chats, the questions and the answers. And if you haven't made a contribution, and if you wish to make a contribution, please do so using Entropy. And the link is in the chat now, as well as the description of the show and on my Telegram and on my Twitter. Okay, so let's do the questions. Timmy Bobinson gave £5, thank you very much, and said, for our babies. John EJ gave $10 and said, great show as ever, guys. Mark, are Leeds going up? I don't really follow football that much, but maybe they are, maybe they're not. But I believe, and I don't want to start a war with Leeds United fans, but haven't they really fluffed it at the end of the season for the last couple of years? I think they have. So Leeds always look poised to do the business, but if anyone can fluff it, it's them and Nottingham Forest. They're two teams that always seem to blow it at the last minute. And the Americans are now going to be thinking, what the hell is he talking about? Serena JB gave £5, thank you very much, and said, do you think those weaponized migrant invaders expected the pushback they got from the Greeks? Well, we'll answer this one quickly, because we've already partially answered that, but we'll go around the group. But I don't think they did. And I personally have gained a huge boost in morale seeing the Greeks rally like this and showing that the European spirit hasn't completely died. I don't think people expected the ferocity of the fight back. I don't think liberals expected this degree of pushback. And I also think that the European Union didn't, and they don't really know what to do, because at one time the EU would have been saying, we must accept these people. But now the Europe are saying, like, oh, Greece are our shield, you know, and praising the Greek people. And I think it's because the European Union can't afford any more countries wanting to leave at the moment. And they don't know how to deal with this when the population are obviously so united against this invasion. Greg, Jason, what do you think? Do you think this is something that liberals expected, or do you think this is an unexpected white pill amongst the black pills?
I think it was unexpected. I didn't expect it. And I'm delighted with it.
I feel the exact same way. I certainly didn't expect to see the wonderful Greeks on the island evict their law enforcement that came there to force this center on them. And I certainly didn't expect to see them at the border shooting live ammunition back at the Molotov cocktails and the live ammunition coming back at them. So it is a very pleasant surprise.
Okay, thank you. The Anglo-Saxon teacher, this is a lovely lady. I was speaking to her earlier on the phone. She's got a great YouTube channel, and she's just a lovely lady. And she said, no message except thank you for everything you do. Thank you very much. And it was lovely speaking to you earlier. Steve Ben Bob gave $3. Thank you very much. And he said, Mark, what was your take on the Yorkshire Post article with Laura Towler? Well, the Yorkshire Post contacted me and Laura to talk about a patriotic alternative. I actually didn't see that they'd contacted me until much, much later in the day. So I missed it. But Laura did an excellent job. I knew she would. And she really deserved to be featured that heavily, because she's done some great work. And I think the Yorkshire Post actually covered us reasonably fairly. It was a decent article. We're on the front page. And I've had my name in lights enough over the years. So I must say, seeing Laura get the kudos and the comments in there, I was happy about that. I think she certainly deserves it. And to have a first front page headline, congratulations, Laura. And thank you to the Yorkshire Post for covering Patriotic Alternative. I think it's the first paper in the country that has done, but I'm sure it will be the first of many when they see what we've got planned. So next question, Blunderbuss gave $25 and said, and this is for you, Greg, Greg is the best guest you'll ever have. I have talked to him at Amren a few years back. Keep on fighting. Well, thank you for the generous donation. And Greg, do you have any comments to that?
I agree. No, I can't say that in all honesty, but I very much appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Greg is indeed one of my favorite guests, and he is top tier. However, he often threatens to drop down a tier by almost being late or actually being late every time we book him. So, Greg,
on time. I was here at the exact stroke.
I was about to turn red with rage when your avatar appeared in the corner. I was screwing my fists up, and Jason was going into sort of rapid "how can I calm him down" mode. So, but you are a fantastic guest. We do love having you.
I apologize for one evening. It was so ridiculous. I went out to dinner with a bunch of friends, and it was like, We were getting close to the end of dinner, and I suddenly realized, oh my God, I was supposed to be on Mark's show about 40 minutes ago. So I went scuttling home, and it was just, there was absolutely no excuse for it. It was just terrible planning on my part. So yes, I have occasionally dropped the ball. I just have so many things I'm juggling. Sometimes I drop the ball, but thanks for, you know, being patient with me about it.
I am patient with you. And because I've talked earlier about my temper control that I've got, I'm so controlled and focused that I look absolutely stoic, even when my internal workings feel like a nuclear reactor over here. The only time I ever lose my temper is when I'm playing computer games. And if things start taking a slide, especially in competitive games, that is the only time I'll show any form of visible sort of emotion or anger. And it's something I've never been able to take it. And if you don't game, you won't understand. But when you're doing everything right, but the game is just absolutely doing you over, and everyone you're playing against just seems to be a second ahead, and you're emptying entire clips into them, but they're just dropping you with one shot and running off laughing. I've snapped pads in half before, but in all of the senses, my temper is absolutely under control. So next question is from David Marcus, who gave $25. Thank you very much. And he said, with the Conservatives backing Erdogan this week, this should wake up the idiots still supporting these traitorous dogs. Well, we spoke briefly about this. I don't really have much more to say other than the Conservatives did let in 379,000 non-EU migrants last year alone. And Boris has been saying that the door is open to Africans. Does anyone have anything further to say about the Conservatives in the UK and the way they are painting themselves as patriots but letting the people down? Nope. Okay, moving on. Henry Walker gave $3 and said, Mark, to what extent is Brexit pro-white? Most people in my region see Polish people as just as bad as Africans or Muslims. I think Brexit was a totemic victory, which was used as a pushback against globalism, against migration, against everything, against the establishment. It was two fingers up to the system. That's what Brexit was. It was a big protest vote. And although I'm not obviously anti-Polish, and a small number of fellow Europeans coming here who will integrate and will fit in is wonderful, I still don't want to see entire towns end up looking like parts of Poland. We don't want so many people from any country that it transforms our country. Now, obviously, I would much prefer Poles or Latvians or French or Swedes as neighbours than Somalians or, Asians. But the fact is, when it comes down to it, we still don't want to be replaced by anyone else. The English are a unique group of people. We're a unique ethnicity. And we do want, we do want England to remain English. That is very, very important. Blunderbuss, I hope Greg's going to answer this. and Jason, because I don't know who some of these people are, which always makes me sound like I'm really terrible. He says, thoughts on Andrew Doyle, don't know who he is, Douglas Murray, yeah, I've heard of him. I think he wrote The Strange Death of Europe. Did he write that? Maybe him. And then Brendan O'Neill, who's a complete and utter cretin, who writes for Spiked, and he's a, I think he describes himself as a Marxist anarchist or anarchist Leninist or some bizarre word salad of ideologies. He's a complete fool. And he says, all I know is they're always in my recommended section. They probably are because they're being pushed as an alternative, but Brendan O'Neill's a joke. Do any of you guys know these people or have any takes on them?
Well, Douglas Murray is a fairly good mainstream writer who is critical of multiculturalism and immigration and so forth. But from a civic nationalist kind of conservative point of view. So he's not quite us, but he's useful to us. I've recommended his books to people. He's more of an on-ramp, I think, to our kind of politics than an active gatekeeper. So yeah, I recommend his work.
They are gateways, and they're being recommended because they want to shunt you off. The anti-whites would like to shunt you and your energy and your anger, rage, etc., off into a controllable pen. And so that they're there is fine, because so many folks end up seeing these people and then pursuing the truth further to the white light of white well-being. And that's a good thing. But I wouldn't indulge them for the truth or a means by which we can reclaim our destiny. This is just another half measure when it comes to the things that we need to do, believe, and act upon to recapture our destiny. Mark.
Yeah, and I don't really big us up very often. I try to be sort of as welcoming and as humble as I can, but we are the real deal. The people who come on this show are the real deal. And I don't, not just talking about myself and Jason or present company, but I mean, everyone who comes on this show are genuine people who will talk about the issues that the people who have just been mentioned won't talk about. And that's the big thing. That is the big thing. And the fact of the matter is, I do believe that some people are very important gateways to our movement. But the fact is, some people are also gatekeepers.
Yeah.
And the only real deal out there are people who are talking about the big issue, which obviously isn't just people here tonight, but the many people within our circles who are talking about the demographic issue, because ultimately that is the only issue. So moving on, we've got a super chat from Lucy Brown. Thank you very much. She gave $3 US and he says, Tommy is very protective of his family and uses his social media platforms to defend himself. I don't think it was a setup, but I also think he exhibits PTSD symptoms and needs treatment. I don't think he exhibits PTSD, Lucy. What's he got PTSD from? Earning too much money, oh my God, my bed is too fluffed with £20 notes. Oh gosh, I've done it again, haven't I? I said I wasn't going to, but I have. Thank you, and moving on. John McDermott gave £5 and he says, for your patriotic diligence. Thank you very much. And obviously, when she said PTSD, she meant from his prison sentence. People are saying that in the chat. That was my joke about the bed with the money, and it wasn't serious. Well, it's partially serious. That's what jokes are. You know, jokes have a kernel of truth, and that's where we laugh at them. The Thin Red Line gave $10 US, and he said, "Mark, you spoke like a true leader. Great guest, Greg." Great guest. Greg Johnson is one of the greatest intellectuals in our movement. Thank you on both counts. Greg, would you like to respond to that?
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And I do have to back that up. I always enjoy having Greg on because Greg's a really nice guy in person as well. I've met him on a couple of occasions, and he is a great guy to have as a table guest at dinner. He's a great conversationalist, and he is someone who's good to be around. And I will say that that aren't really actors in this movement. Everyone that we have on this show is pretty much how they are in real life, except for obviously me, because apparently I look a lot smaller in real life than I look on the show. But that's the only difference. The only difference is in height. Millennial Woes always likes to point that out when he meets me, that he always expected me to be bigger. So nice. Great Lakes Nationalist gave $15 and said, any thoughts on whether Greece will be undermined by the US State Department or Merkel, Macron and the EU Commission in its effort to repel invaders? Well, we've kind of touched on this one earlier. It seems like the EU are praising them, but what do you think? I've already spoken about this. Greg, do you think there will be international forces working to undermine Greece's defense plans?
Of course, yeah. All the Soros-type NGOs, definitely. Also, the fact is that Turkey is part of NATO. That means that people are going to look favorably upon Turkey. They think Turkey is an important ally, blah, blah, blah. I think they're shifty allies, bad neighbors for Europe. But the United States has air bases in Turkey. The United States government is going to try and de-escalate this, perhaps, but they're not going to de-escalate it in any way that the Turks get the knuckle wrapping that they so richly deserve. Turkey's behavior in Syria, basically they're delaying the end of a 9-year civil war. Who doesn't want that civil war to end? Well, the neoconservatives, broadly speaking, the neoconservatives and all their cousins, the United States government, the government of Israel and so forth, they want Syria to be bleeding. They want as much trouble in that area as possible. So yeah, there are lots of forces that want this to, the resolve of the Greeks to break, the borders to be open, etc. Merkel, I don't know what she's going to do. She has had her knuckles wrapped so badly because of the stupidity of inviting these people in. She might be somewhat hesitant, somewhat gun-shy about this particular thing. I was astonished that Macron and also Donald Tusk, who's like a Polish globalist, baloney merchant type, they've all praised the Greeks. That's remarkable. So praising the Greeks for what they're doing is becoming a centrist thing in Europe. And that's a good sign. Now, whether it's a centrist thing because of their convictions or because they're total whores and are just looking at polls and are afraid of the voters, the net result is the same, right? So there are forces, though, who want to destroy Europe, and they're going to relish this. But I think the counter forces are growing in power, and that's what we want. We are part of those counter forces.
Do you have any thoughts on that, Jason?
Well, I agree completely with Greg's sagacious comments that the anti-white regime, and of course, this means all of the Western governments because they hold a dominance of control and power over those nerve centers. They are going to be doing everything they can, even if individuals, and see, this is sometimes we have this, as human beings, we have this, and I know this has something to do with having two hemispheres, but we have this tendency to bifurcate something and then place the, like a hive brain over top any sort of action. There are going to be individuals who are anti-white traditionally, normally, or in all of their behaviors up to now and their reputation. And they are going to want to keep their place where they are at the public trough. And they're going to then say things right now that they think they have that thing, that wet finger in the air, and they think is going to serve them in the long run. However, the anti-whites, we know what the real objective of everything they do is to inflict harm on Western kind and Western civilization. So they are going to be moving in all ways to undermine what the Greek government is doing, and specifically undermine the influence that the Greek population has on the Greek government. We'll see those as they materialize. But certainly Greg's hitting upon a important point. That we have Turkey here allied with the West, but not Greece. And in fact, no countries have spoken up as coming to Greece's defense if there were a war between Turkey and Greece. So it is a very precarious situation to have this flaccid military in Greece, a very aggressive anti-white government in Turkey, and this warfare that has been stepped up. And thank God that Erdogan has made it official. Now it's no longer just that we're sending you some women and children. How dare they stop them at the border? Now he is just openly saying to the world, which means that it's very easy to take it to our brothers and sisters out there, openly saying to the world, this is war on Western kind. This is war on Europe. This is war until they give me what I want. And Greece will be that first, it's going to be the flashpoint. It's going to be the casualty and perhaps a casus belli for something much more violent in the region.
Right. One thing that strikes me as a potential benefit of this is a split or at least greater tension between the EU and NATO. Because Turkey is part of NATO. NATO is an American project. NATO has basically made all of Europe a protectorate of the United States. And yet the European Union seems to be opposing this. And I think there could be high level conversations where there are basically people screaming at one another between the NATO brass and the EU hierarchy. And that's a good thing for Europe. Mm-hmm. NATO has far outlived its mission. And it would be good for that. Basically, for me, any of these globalist type organizations are bad because we don't control them. And if these globalist organizations are fighting with one another, that gives nationalist and populist forces a fighting chance.
Yeah. Okay, and this is a question for Greg. Oh, no, we've got one more super chat here. Lawrence Scott gave £10. He says, good work. And Ordo Nature said, gave £3. Thank you very much. And says, does Greg have any book recommendations which deal with uplifting and overcoming the self, hero's journey, and just otherwise inspiring, motivational, spiritual for a nationalist?
Gosh, that's a really good question because I don't have a canned, ready answer for that. That's something I need to think about some. Maybe I can think about this and respond later as the conversation continues.
Okay, maybe you could come back to that one. Well, we'll go over to, we've done the super chats for now, but if people want to donate, there's still plenty of time, and there's the link, it's in the chat now. But we do have some questions, and we'll go for the most popular one first, which was actually something that was on the show topics before we started, but I didn't talk about it yet because we had a lot to talk about in the first half. But yeah, here we go. Here goes. Richard Wagner says, how can we take advantage of the coronavirus situation to help the cause of white well-being? Well, that's a very interesting question. I've spoken about this before. I think the coronavirus, whilst not as deadly and quite as terrible as some people have made out, I do think it is a threat. However, it is only a threat in the West because of globalization. Now, lots of people are scared about this. Lots of people are worried about it. There is some panic. I don't think it's as bad as the tabloids are making out. For example, the Daily Mail loves to do a story every now and again going, supermarkets have been sold out. You know, I went to the supermarket earlier and nothing was sold out. It was just as it always is. And I'm sure what happens is, you know, when they're restocking part of the supermarket, so every now and again, they move the supermarket around. So they'll move the baked beans from sort of aisle 14 to aisle 20. And while they're doing that, there's a section of the aisle that's bare. And all there is in that section is little tickets saying how much things are on the shelves, but nothing on the shelves. And I'm sure some joker goes into Tesco or Sainsbury's, takes a picture of this empty section of shelving, and then just texts his mate saying, all the beans have gone, the coronavirus is here, it's panic buying. And then everyone laughs, and the Daily Mail picks it up and runs with it. And I do think, in some ways, it is in the paper's interests to create a little bit of panic because that sells papers. It creates news. It creates buzz. But I do think that if we're going to benefit from this, we need to talk about the fact that the only reason anyone in the UK has coronavirus, or the only reason it's worked its way to these shores, is quite simply because the globalist system has allowed it to. The fact is, and people say, oh, we don't have open borders. Well, we do have open borders, very much so. The fact is, people come here from all over the world. They hop from country to country every day. And it is the globalist open border system that is putting us at risk. And it isn't just coronavirus. Think of how many people come into Britain every day with other illnesses, with HIV, with illnesses that aren't common in this country or are potentially life-threatening. And this only happens because our global elite masters are more concerned about keeping their plan in action than they are about our safety. And I think we need to keep emphasizing that point, that this globalist system isn't about making the West a safer or more prosperous or better place to live. It is about making huge amounts of money, which is concentrated in the hands of a very few number of people. And the other reason for this system is because they are trying to get rid of us, and we will be a minority by the 2060s if things carry on down this route quicker in America. And I think all of these things are linked to the coronavirus, and we can use the coronavirus as a powerful argument against globalization. What are your thoughts on this, Greg?
Well, there are two ways the coronavirus can help us. One is that it is an argument against globalization, and the people who are basically dragging their feet, standing in the way of public health measures, are the globalists. Both the lovey-dovey left-wing globalists who think it'd be racist to stop bugs from coming from China, and also the oligarchical right-wing free trade globalists. They're united in wanting to have porous borders, and that's not good for us in an age of epidemics. The word quarantine comes from the Italian word for 40, because the Venetians started quarantining ships for 40 days to prevent the plague from coming ashore when the plague was a thing in the Middle Ages. Quarantine is the sign of a healthy society, a society that takes itself seriously, that believes in basing policy on reality rather than on fantasies. We base our policies on liberal globalist nonsense and also the stock market. We're afraid that if we have anything to slow down the flow of goods, that we're going to have a stock market crash and things like that. That's not the way a serious country is run. A serious country is run in terms of the interests of the people, and we just don't have that. So yeah, it's a great argument. Now, the other ways that it could be helpful, and these are very, very sinister things to say, and maybe I shouldn't even say them, but honestly, the people who are most susceptible to being wiped out by the coronavirus are, for instance, the three Democratic frontrunners, who are all in their 70s, right? The boomer genocide people might get their wish. This might just wipe out a whole bunch of the baby boom generation. And I don't like these anti-boomer memes and things like that, but it does seem to disproportionately affect older people. And since older people are disproportionately white, I mean, this could be absolutely devastating for white demographics in Western Europe and the United States. There could be a lot fewer white people when coronavirus is done. However, there are some people on the right who think that boomers are the thing that are getting in the way of our ideas progressing. And then beyond that, I mean, if coronavirus becomes something huge, or like the Spanish influenza, which killed, 20 or 30 million people? Mm-hmm. In 100 years ago, it killed 20 or 30 million people when transportation was much harder and more expensive than it is today. Imagine if we had something like the Spanish flu today with cheap global transportation, people flying all over the place and stuff like that. It could simply dramatically alter the entire globe, politically speaking, demographically, and demographics involves politics. It has political implications. So this could be a huge shuffling of the deck, right? This could change the whole political map, change the whole demographic map if it's really, really bad. Now, I don't know how bad it is. When initial statements were coming out of China, they were saying that there are 8,000 people who have it and 200 people have died and 200 people have recovered. And if the same number of people who are listed as recovered, it put it this way, if as many people recover as die, that's a 50% death rate. That's totally alarming. That's bigger than the Black Death was in the Middle Ages. Okay. So I think that this could be a very bad thing. I just don't know yet. I think that if it's a really bad thing, I think a lot of the people who are running our societies want to keep us in the dark about it. So I'm not going to crowded things anymore, put it that way. I'm not going to movie theaters. I'm not going to concerts. I'm staying away from crowded subways and streetcars. I'm carrying hand sanitizer around. I'm not going to miss the gym. I still haven't given that up, but I have become much more of a hermit because of this, because we really don't know yet. And if you're like me and you have parents or, other relatives and loved ones who are in their 70s and, or on up, they have to be really careful. This is getting serious. Definitely. And it could be a game-changing thing. At the very least, it's going to discredit globalization a great deal, even amongst people who are on the center-right and just at the center of the political spectrum. And so that's something that we can work with if we're not all dead, of course. So.
Just to throw this out there, though, as sort of a counter to what you said just there, about how serious it is. You see, the Chinese population runs at about 1.4 billion. And out of 1.4 billion, only 90,000 people have contracted it. And out of the 90,000 people who've contracted it, around 3,000 have died. So the mortality rate is around 1 in 30 of those who have actually got it. But
how many of those people who have got it end up recovering from it? That's the issue here. If they're saying 3,000 people have died and 3,000 people have recovered, and there are 80,000 others who are still sick, I mean, they could go into one camp or the other. So it's too early to say.
But what I'm saying is, in China at the moment, that would have the odds of you dying of the coronavirus as 466,666 recurring, and that is, I don't know. I'm just saying, it doesn't seem to me, it just seems to me that it is a threat. I'm not saying it's not, but I think as long as people stay vigilant, as long as people aren't silly about things, if you've got it, make sure you get treated. And obviously this will affect small, young babies. It will also affect the elderly or people with existing health conditions. But please, please do, please don't start thinking that this is something like the Black Death, where there's going to be bodies piled up in the street. It just isn't that. And I think that sometimes, especially in our movement, there's almost some kind of wish for the next happening. I know that's a term that's been very played out, but everyone's like, oh my gosh, is this going to be a happening? Is this going to be the time when it happens? Are we going to actually see are happening in our lifetime, and people are expecting to see the next Black Death or the next Great Fire of London or something that will go down in history as one of these defining world events. And I just don't see, you know, when SARS, when there was the SARS outbreak, when there was the Ebola outbreak, those things didn't have the impact people said they were going to. And I just urge a little bit of restraint on this.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, I mean, there. Let's be obvious. There. Let's be perfectly honest. There are people who really are rooting for like a global pandemic, and they're not just radical environmentalist types, right? There are people who are rooting for a globalist pandemic, a global die-off of the human race. Well, I mean, that is really an indication of the level of cynicism that people have about politics today. But you know, everything that we say is premised on the idea that the white race, if present trends are not interrupted, is going to go extinct anyway. There's the whole Extinction Rebellion thing, which is based on, I think, a lot of nonsense about global warming. But the point is that people want some kind of catastrophic thing because they're so disgusted with the current system. And what, I mean, put it this way. In the United States, the front runner of the Democratic Party is a man of 77 whose false teeth come lurching out of his mouth, whose eyes bleed in public, who can't resist sniffing the hair of women and children, and is obviously slipping into dementia and babbling. He can't tell his sister from his wife. He can't finish sentences. He forgets where he is, what state he's in, and on and on and on. That man is being put forward by one of the two major parties in America as their leading candidate. And when you look at a system that out of touch with reality, and you weigh that in one hand, and then you weigh like Corona Chan in the other hand, you know, people just say, just blow it all up. We just need to blow it all up and start over from scratch because there's no damn way that you can fix a system that's so out of touch with reality. And that's the way a lot of Americans feel about our political system. And a lot of people feel that way about the global economic system. They feel that way about the global economic system destroying the planet. And they just think, we've got to have some major event to shuffle the deck. Now, this idea of a happening or like in a major event, I mean, they do happen, right? And when you think about what we want something like that. At the very least, we want a break with history. We want a break with the progressivist, globalist, liberal political paradigm. We want nationalism and populism and a healthier attitude towards the greater world to take its place. So we want that kind of event. We want within our lifetimes for there to be a cut in the historical continuum, and it's BC and AD, right? That big a cut. And we want to leave the age of liberalism and globalism and progress behind and enter the age of nationalism and ecology and sort of a biocentric politics, which includes nationalism and racialism, and I think also environmentalism. We want that to happen. I want that to happen in my lifetime. And that's why I think a lot of people just are just itching for a catastrophe, anything to stop this system that we're trapped in, basically.
Jason, have you got any thoughts on this before we do the last few super chats?
Yes, sir. I do. The original question is a fantastic one, and how we can use coronavirus to help wake our brothers and sisters to what's going on in the world. You can absolutely use it. Don't burn your reputation. We talk about reputational investment and going free. So you don't want to go to your friends and family and strangers and say, this is the big one. It's going to be the end of the world. It's going to be this global pandemic. It's going to kill millions and millions, because if it doesn't, of course, I don't know. But if it doesn't, then you won't be able to persuade them of anything in the future. They'll only remember those stories that you told about everybody dying across the world. So instead, say, you know what, we have this this global disease that is circulating right now, to whatever degree it's going to be bad or worse, or it would not be here if it weren't for anti-whiteism, which says no borders for Western countries, which is interesting, mom, dad, cousin, et cetera, because they have no problem with borders being up on non-white countries. Not only that, well, I mean, you can follow that point up with, well, these people, since anti-whiteism has no borders, for it has initiated and caused a scenario where there are no borders or lackluster, porous Swiss cheese borders, these people could be bringing in coronavirus or something else. In the future, there could be something much worse. So maybe this coronavirus is nothing. Maybe it's just a warning to us now so that we can be ready for something in the future. We have to reclaim our destiny and have borders on our countries so we can prevent this from happening. And then you can go into the next part of the persuasive argument, which is that, you know what, these things, I mean, and you can go back and folks can check on this to see if I'm right or not, but a lot of these diseases like the Black Death, et cetera, Spanish flu, came from China. It came from the Asia. And as a consequence, these things wouldn't have been here if the people wouldn't have been here. So the kind of thinking, I know some people are saying, well, they're speculating it was made in a laboratory somewhere, but there is also evidence that it was zoonotic. It came about and that kind of thing can happen. It came about from people eating things that are exotic and strange, and it passed then from an animal to a person and is now being spread among people. And by the way, also back to animals. There have now been two dogs. One was tested weak positive twice and one tested positive today. This means that it could be passed to migratory birds and the like. And so you could talk to them about the fact that, well, maybe in the future, if you bring in people with a different biosphere than our own, have different culinary tastes, it's not going to start in a far off land like China or Taiwan, you know, or Vietnam. It's going to start in Louisiana. It's going to start in New York State. It's going to start, you know, in Surrey. It's going to start somewhere in our back door because they're eating those things now here. And I'm going to point out again, because I've had more people messaging me about my show on Sunday saying that they can't find any information about there being a second doppelganger. When I made my speculation on Sunday about that, based on the way the governments and the major institutions are behaving, and there's more evidence now. Researchers from Beijing and Shanghai studied 103 samples of coronavirus. They've named the two. One is far more deadly. That's what I was speculating about. That's why they're shutting things down in such a big way. The one that probably most people are getting and recovering from is the version that is not so deadly. The other one is the reason why they're talking about canceling the Olympics, closing the school year down, preventing that auto show in Switzerland, 600,000 people. The revenue that would have been accumulated as a result of that auto show, now all gone, the effect that will have on the economy. There's something else that's out there. But talk about this in the sense that it is something that is caused by anti-whiteism. It wouldn't be here if we didn't have anti-whiteism creating poor sports, and it wouldn't be here if people weren't brought in from foreign lands that have very different tastes, do things very different way. And not only that, but these other races they're different from us. And this is a great opportunity to point out to these friends and family that race is real. It's not just a construct. It is being reported all across establishment media that Asiatics are more susceptible because their lung tissue is different from the lung tissues of whites or the lung tissues of other races. And so race is indeed real. The virus is discriminating to some degree when it comes to who it infects and kills. So yet again, something else you can talk about to help those around you go free. Mark, please.
Oh, one thing I want to point out is that the initial coronavirus discussions had me quitting Twitter for a while because of all the disgusting videos and pictures of Asian food and Asian markets and things like that. And one of the benefits of this is that it's pretty much destroyed the last refuge of the diversity mongers, which is to talk about the great range of ethnic restaurants, right? It's like, okay, you talk about great range of ethnic restaurants, and I've got this bat soup meme to throw back at you, right? It's profoundly upsetting to the globalist, multiculturalist thing. And yes, the ideal situation is that coronavirus isn't a global pandemic, but it wakes enough people up so that we, for instance, don't have this massive movements of people, right? That we slow this thing down a bit. And also that we think very, very seriously about decoupling our economies from economies like China, especially in the production of medical supplies.
Yeah.
That is becoming a real issue. Oh, great. A lot of medical things that are imported into Europe and the United States are being made in China, right? And that's problematic. We shouldn't do that because, well, bad things can happen, right? We want to have a certain amount of autarky, right? Rather than lowest price globalization. This really helps us make a lot of very, very good arguments against the old paradigm that we want to replace.
Excellent. Well, we've got some quick fire questions here for you, Greg, some super chats. If you could answer them as quickly as you can, because we've got about 5 or 6 minutes for you to do that. Sure. In. Alexander V gave $3. Thank you. He said, hello, Greg. Have you seen Asher Logos's videos? And what do you think?
I saw part of one of them, and my attention was drawn to it because the person said that this Asher Logos was sort of using some of my arguments, but honestly, I didn't see that, and I just haven't gone back, and I just don't know. So yeah, the answer is pretty much no. I'm not familiar with his work.
Okay, excellent. Patriot Pirate gave $3. Thank you very much. And he said, Greg, in view of Trump's failure, for whom do we Americans vote and/or how do we steer our government in our direction?
Trump isn't as big a failure as a lot of people are making him out to be. He's a big disappointment, but he has reduced refugee resettlement. He has tightened the immigration system in many ways. He hasn't built a wall. But honestly, the wall was more of a symbol than anything. And he's a giant disappointment. There's no question about it. The America First foreign policy and trade policy, well, a lot of that isn't as we envisioned it or hoped it would be. But he had the entire system against him. I honestly think Trump has advanced us both in politics and more importantly, in getting debates going about globalization and immigration that were just not being allowed before. He has changed American attitudes. He has made Americans more susceptible, more receptive to our kinds of arguments. So, yeah, I want Trump to be reelected. I think it would be good to have Trump reelected. He's a much better campaigner than a president. This campaign, once the Democrats choose their candidate, is going to be absolutely compelling viewing. There are going to be lots of interesting debates going on, debates that we can win. So I want him to get reelected. The other reason I really want him to get reelected is that I just think that reelecting Trump might break the spirits of a lot of leftists. They might just give up, and that he would have a lot less opposition in the second term than he did in his first.
I broadly agree with what you say. I'm just going to quickly add, he also exposed the media and has undermined people's confidence in the media to a huge degree, which we should be very thankful for. Nervi Homza gave $3, and this is a statement, so I'm just going to read it out quickly. Jason, it seems very evident that the EU seeks to inflict upon Europeans continental white Eurasia. I'm sure the EU hates how native Greeks are inspiring other native Europeans to rally. We'll all agree with that. Mr. Sandman gave $10. Thank you very much. And he said, thank you guys for what you do. Wish I could do more. And we have one last question from Eric Drave. He said he tried to do this on Entropy, but the super chats are not showing up. We don't know if they've gone through or been charged, but I'm going to ask his question anyway. And Greg, you'll have to answer this quickly. But he says, Greg, I am new to you and your position, but on face value, you do seem like a closet Eurasianist. The hand rubbing comment I found a little bit disturbing, to be honest. Good show, by the way.
Okay, well, I don't have much answer to that except to just say that that was amusing. But no, I'm not a closet Eurasianist, whatever that means.
Okay, well, we do have one last question, and we'll ask this because I think this is quite important. If you can answer this, we'll go back 2 minutes. It's from Peter Shorenstein. He says, does Greg consider his ideological disagreements with people like Richard Spencer great enough to permanently refuse working with him?
My ideological disagreements with Richard Spencer are one thing, but the reason why I don't want to work with him is that he's just a person of very low character and I don't trust him. So, yeah, there are issues besides ideology. In many places, Richard has his heart in the right place. I think on some issues, he's just wrong. But I work with people who disagree with me on the very same issues that Richard does. But I work with them because I can trust them and I can get on with them. And that's just not the case with Richard.
Well, you have worked with him once. You were on our 100th anniversary show together. And I do like both you and Richard. And I do understand that sometimes things happen between people that prevent them from working together again. And those things are huge betrayals or particularly nasty incidents. And I certainly wouldn't force people who have gone through that to work together. But you and Richard, you are pushing in the same direction. You do have very similar takes on a lot of things. And I think, if I can be as bold to say it, maybe you two are a little bit too similar for your own good. And maybe that's sometimes, you know, opposites attract and sometimes people who are too similar rub each other up the wrong way. But you're both very, very intelligent men who give very good takes on things. And I hope in the future, maybe one day, you can put this, what I see as a slight disagreement aside. But I'm happy to be friends with both of you because you are both fantastic advocates for our cause.
Well, I appreciate what you're saying. I find him just very, very cringy, honestly, and I feel like he brings embarrassment upon us more often than makes us proud. But anyway, so that's a good question.
I think you answered it very well. I do believe that maybe one day in the future, you know, we're all pushing in the same direction. And as things do get worse, we'll probably be either forced to stand together or go it alone, because unfortunately things aren't getting any better at the moment and we've still got a lot to do. But I think I respect both of you very much. You're both, you know, welcome on the show. And Greg, you always bring an incredible audience and we've had an incredible night tonight. And sadly, it is coming to an end, which is always a problem. These two-hour shows, they always fly by. And this is a great time just to say a huge thank you to Greg. You have been a superb guest. You are obviously welcome back on again. But before you do leave us, could you please tell us where we can find you and how we can support your work and give any last brief words to our audience before we bring the show to a close?
Well, thanks again for having me. The website is countercurrents.com. That's countercurrents with a hyphen. We have been going for nearly 10 years. We will celebrate our 10th anniversary June 11th this year. It will be the 10th anniversary of us going online. We're primarily a webzine. We publish about 15 or 20 pieces every week. We have a weekly podcast that comes out on Fridays. And we just have some very, very talented writers working for us, very talented commentators, loyal fans and supporters. There's just a legion of them. Our traffic is quite good now. It's gone way, way up in the past 6 months or so. Really, since May of last year, we started seeing a dramatic increase in the number of people coming to us. So I value that. There's a lot there to see if you haven't visited Countercurrents before. If you want to read my work, I have lots of articles online. I've published 11 books now of my own writings. Countercurrents has published about 60 books. We are taking a step back from the book business really to focus more on putting out free online content because that has the most impact. And that also has the least, pushback. We were deplatformed last year from 80% of the global book market, which basically consists of two corporations, Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble. They both deplatformed us completely. So, but the word keeps getting out. So if you haven't visited Countercurrents, please visit Countercurrents, and I hope you'll bookmark it and make it a regular stop.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much. Jason, give us your little outro. Tell us who's on tap and where we can find it and what time tap is on this week.
I will indeed. NoWineGuilt.org, theafterparty.tv. Make sure you find us over on No Wine Guilt on YouTube. We are tapping into Dion tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're going to have secret sources. We're going to have a fantastic time. It's going to be marvelous. Look forward to seeing every single one of you there. No reason to miss that because she is a wonderful lady. And I will say one thing to the entirety of the audience and to Mark so that we know this, that the great Roy Danton discovered the other day that on Entropy, if, when, gifting monetarily, your message is too long. The message will not come through. I do not know if the gift comes through. And I pass it back to you, dear friend.
Ah, well, that might explain why Eric Drave's super chat didn't come through, but we did read it out, Eric. We read out your question to Greg and he answered it. Apologies if super chats don't come through because they're too long. I'll speak to Rachel at Entropy about that as soon as possible. I'll contact her tomorrow. That just leaves me to say, oh, we've got one last super chat. It's from Spoopy Moon Critter. That's an awesome name. $15. Thank you very much. And he said, Erdogan giving an Ottoman slap to the West as he threatened 2 years back. He is not getting enough Danegeld. Well, indeed. So that just leaves me to say thank you. Usually at this point in the evening, I would say there is a stream afterwards, usually on Wash does something, but he doesn't seem to do anything. Oh, my gosh. £3 was just donated by Ordonator to remind us that we didn't answer his chat. Greg, you didn't give any book recommendations which deal with
yourself. Yeah, yeah.
Quick, my friend. We're running into overtime.
Yeah, I really am sort of coming up with a blank. You want something that's spiritual and inspirational. Well, if you're sort of inclined towards that's just a really good question. I really am coming up with a blank on that. The stuff that I read is really, really dense and academic or, you know, ancient texts and stuff like that. And it's just not something that I can easily recommend to people. One writer that I recommend, though, on these sorts of topics is Colin Cleary at Countercurrents. He's put out a couple of books. He has many, many essays as well. And I highly recommend those. So maybe that would be the best thing, just to start with Colin Cleary's essays at Countercurrents. And that'll open up a whole world of writing that I think is spiritual and inspirational.
Well, thank you very much. And thank you to Jason for suggesting my book, which I hope plenty of people have found uplifting and inspirational. I always do my best. Thank you so much. Apparently, Unwashed is streaming tonight after this show. So if you want more nationalism, Unwashed is giving it to you after this show on his channel. I believe he's starting now. And that just leaves me to say thank you so much. Thank you to all the people who donated. If you didn't have a chance to donate via Entropy, you can still donate via Entropy after the show is finished now. And you can also send donations via Bitcoin or write to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. The replay of this show will be available on BitChute 12 hours after it has finished. So within 12 hours, this will be moved over to BitChute. And that just leaves me to say thank you. Thank you to Greg. Thank you to Jason. Thank you to all of the people who donated so generously to this show tonight. And thank you, most of all, to the audience. Thank you so much for always being here, showing such great support. I love you all. We will be back the same time next week. And my video this week will be a special video exposing the media's faked images and agenda over the Greek invasion, over these migrants attempting to invade Greece. It's taken me quite a long time to edit that down. I've been very busy with it today, so check that out on Friday. And of course, we'll be back same time next week. So that just leaves me to say, have a great rest of your evening. I love you all loads, and I will see you again soon. Good night, and stay safe.